I'm Ken MacLeod. From the day we launched unfetteredmind.org, it has operated without a paywall, advertising, or a subscription charge. This is only possible through the generosity of people like you. If you find our materials useful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate. Thank you, and enjoy this podcast.
Unfettered Mind, Karma and Reincarnation.
Well, sometimes I come here. Oh, what's the date today? 14th. Okay. Against the Stream, November 14th, 2010. Okay. Sutra session. All right. Sometimes I come here and I have absolutely no idea what to talk about. And I have a very simple remedy for that. So where should we start today? Let's start over here. If you hand the mic over, please. I'm just going to... Questions. Oh, everybody always has a question. That's why you come here, because you have a question.
And here's some other questions.
Okay.
Well, I'd like you to talk a little bit about karma, if you would. I have trouble kind of accepting the whole thing. I mean, I understand the conditionality of causes and effects, but the long-term business of it, especially the reincarnation, past lives, future lives, that's something I've troubled with. Can you tell me how you have accepted that and to what level, to what degree it's based on your experience and what, to what degree it's based on faith purely?
You make an enormous assumption in your question. Well, I can talk about this probably for a very long time, probably much longer than you want. But well, let's see. Okay. There's a lot of misunderstanding about karma for many, many different reasons. And I'm not going into the reasons. I'm going to present a couple of ideas about that. The first idea I'd like to present is that the whole notion of cause and effect is a very inaccurate, and it's a Western way of looking at karma. And it's And completely problematic, because in looking at karma in terms of cause and effect, you just wind up in a big mess. And the term in Tibetan is composed of three words, le, gyu, and dre. Now, le is the word for action. It's the word for work, actually. And karma, basically, the word karma means action. The second word, gyu, is usually what is translated by cause. But to my mind, it's a very inaccurate translation, because in English, we simply don't say that an acorn is the cause of an oak tree. I mean, if you're a philosopher, you might say something like that. But most of us aren't. So we use English more correctly than philosophers do. And so an acorn isn't the cause of an oak tree. It's the genesis of an oak tree. That's a very different thing. And dre is the word for fruit. Literally, it's the word for fruit. Drebu is the word, you know, for apple and orange and things. So it's the result. And that's what is usually translated as effect. So a better metaphor for karma than cause and effect is this seed or genesis, which grows into something. And that's a different picture right there. We have to go a step further. In Eastern thought, you have Genesis, which is my translation of this word gyu, or, and I can give you the Sanskrit for it if you're interested in, but, and then there's another thing, and that is the conditions. So, that allows something to grow or prevent something from growing. So if I plant a carrot seed in the ground, well, if that is just straight sand, and there's not anything, there's no clay or anything like that, and in particular there's no nutrients of any kind, and there's no water, what's going to happen to that carrot seed? Well, it's just not going to do anything. It's just going to sit there like a grain of sand. So even though there's a genesis for a carrot there, no carrot comes out. There have to be the right conditions. So when we're talking about karma, we're talking about a way of looking at how experience arises in terms of certain experiences arises from, there's a genesis for them, and then there have to be the right conditions for those things actually to happen. And when I said earlier today, at the beginning of our meditation session, what we do in meditation is grow attention. One of the basic tenets of Buddhism is that we all have the genesis of attention in us. And by applying or arranging the right conditions, which is sitting in a relatively straight and resting attention, resting in the experience of breathing, we actually create the conditions for attention to grow in us. That's karma. Now, there are three, if I can remember them. Yeah, okay, we've touched on one. Right, okay. There are three metaphors, sort of metaphors, for karma that I find useful. As my friend Stephen Batchelor says, what's the answer to everything in the East? It's karma. Which is to say, karma explains absolutely nothing. Because it's the answer that you give. Now, what was the answer that we used to give in the West? And up to maybe at the very most 50 years ago, but really 100 years ago.
God's will.
It was God's will. You know, that's how we related to things. Well, it was God's will. And if you're a Muslim, you say, Inshallah, whatever, you know. There's a wonderful story about Nasruddin, who's my favorite Buddhist teacher. And he goes to the tailor and he says, can you make me a suit? And the tailor said, if it pleases Allah, yes. Okay, and well, what do we do? Well, I have to measure you. That's why he measures him. And so, so when it will be ready? Well, if it pleases Allah, next week. Yes. And what if I need to have alterations? Well, if it pleases Allah, we speak to the my assistant. And at this point, Nasruddin says, "Could we just leave Allah out of this, please?" So God's will, inshallah, karma, etc. These are all ways that were used to explain or refer to things that we couldn't explain any other way. It was just to say, that's a mystery. We don't understand, we don't know, and we can't know. So that's one way that karma is used. The second way I've already referred to, it's karma as evolution. Okay? Things evolve. They grow into other experiences and so forth. And the third one is the law of gravity. You know, has anybody ever tried to repeal the law of gravity? You know, we have the law of karma. And it's in Eastern thought, it's viewed as how the universe works. A very, very deep principle. Now, you ask, how have I come to accept this? One of my teachers was Dajun Rinpoche. Died some years ago. Dajun Rinpoche was really quite an extraordinary person. He was brought over to the West by the CIA lived in Seattle at the University of Washington to provide resources because the CIA compiled a Tibetan English dictionary and things like that to run insurgents in Tibet. He was one of the most profound and widely learned scholars of this last generation of Tibetan teachers. Incredible person. If you asked him a question, you had to be prepared to sit there for 2 hours. Because he was such an encyclopedia of knowledge. He was also an extremely warm person. And one day, he was teaching a group of us, and he talked about his own teacher, and how when he was a young monk and studying with this, and because he was recognized as having special ability, he got special tutoring from this person. And as they were walking along, his teacher said to him, "Oh, Dejung La, do you believe in karma?" And Dejung Rinpoche, being a young, enthusiastic monk and fully engaged in Buddhism, said, "Oh, yes!" And his teacher, who had spent years in retreat really working very, very deeply, was himself an extraordinary person, said, "Oh, God, you're so lucky. I find it really hard." And that really shook Dejung Rinpoche. Now, what is karma in the end? Karma is a story. It's a story that was made up to explain what was unexplainable. Why are some people horrible, mean people and rich and live long and healthy lives? Now, it really rubs us the wrong way. Why are some people who are just absolutely wonderful people poor or ill or just scraping by in life? It is not fair. And why are people cut down in the prime of their life? Why? I mean, all kinds of things happen, and we have no explanation. And the answer is karma. So it's a story. Now, we in the West, we have our own stories, and we have a long history of chucking stories when they're no longer convenient or they no longer fit the way we look at the world. You know, we had the Ptolemaic universe with all of these epicycles and spheres within spheres and things like that. And then Galileo saw the rings around Saturn, and so that story got chucked. And then there is the whole theory about diseases which had to do with humors and elements and things like that. But then Pasteur came up with this idea that there were little squigglies called bacteria. And that story got chucked. And this is what we do in the West. We throw away stories when they no longer fit our experience. So now I want to start some totally other place. I find James Joyce completely unreadable, except for one book. A few of you have discussed this with me before, so I know. Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. This is his only readable book, as far as I'm concerned. And at the end of the book, he goes into a complete rant about how any religion which says you are damned to in eternal hell before you're even born is inhumanly cruel. That's towards the end of that book. And so this is his reason for rejecting Catholicism. Well, sometime or other in my career in studying Buddhism, this whole business about, you know, a bus careens off a cliff and all of these school children are killed. Well, that's their karma. They must have been murderers in a previous life. I don't buy it. I'm sorry. That's the story. But I think that is just as inhumanly cruel. Where you look at this. And I come back to this point. Is this a story to explain what is inexplicable? I prefer to live in the mystery. Okay? You may have a follow-up question.
Well, does that mean that you don't fully accept the notion of reincarnation and it's okay not to? And
oh, I've got to ask this question. What's going to happen to you if you don't accept reincarnation?
Nothing's going to happen to me. I just want to feel comfortable as somebody who follows Buddhism and not believing in reincarnation.
Sorry, I didn't catch the last part there. Feel comfortable, I didn't hear.
Identifying myself as a follower of Buddhism and not accepting certain things that are considered central by some people to this faith.
They're considered central by some people, yes. But, okay. What inspires you about Buddhism? Why are you interested in this weird esoteric thing from the East?
Well, from experience, it has been very beneficial to me in terms of letting go of a lot of things and living in a more peaceful and calm way and relating to the world in a more realistic, truthful way.
Ah, okay. So why, if you have that kind of benefit from it, would you burden yourself with a whole bunch of extra beliefs?
I haven't, but I come across them from time to time when I go to Buddhist talks.
Oh, yes, I know. And you, if you listen carefully, you will hear the sounds of me being drummed out of one Buddhist center after another. I gave a talk at a Buddhist center once. Somebody came up to me and said, well, if Buddhism had the concept of heresy, that would definitely fit. Look, there is this body of teaching that comes down to us, which is extraordinarily rich and multifaceted, which has been practiced for like 2,500 years. There's a huge body of experience and wisdom, learning, understanding in it. And every single individual has had to find their own path. You take what is useful in exactly the way that you've described, and you find your own path. And it's very important, I think, that you do not let the social pressure or peer pressure or cultural pressure lead you to believe something that doesn't actually fit with you. Now, you may find at a certain point that something you've been holding, which is very important to me, you may find that that's completely wrong, and then you let it go yourself. But that's because it no longer makes sense to you. And everybody loves quoting the Kamala Sutra, you know, just rely on your own understanding, etc., etc. But as Ajahn Amaro, a friend of mine, pointed out, everybody leaves out the second part of the Kamala Sutra, which says, how do you discern what is true? By listening to those who have practiced, etc., and seeing what they have said. So you listen, you weigh it against your own experience, and you keep an open mind. But absolutely it has to make sense to you because it is your life and your practice and your path. And there are many instances in my own experience where I thought, okay, I understand this, you know, and I wouldn't listen to anybody, and I would go that way, and at a certain point things would get really hard, and then I would find, oh, this can't be true. It just doesn't make any sense. I'd run into a brick wall, or actually it was usually I dropped off a cliff, and think, oh, there wasn't any ground there after all. But it's coming from your own experience then. And make every effort to plumb the depths of your own experience. That's very important. Don't believe everything your own experience is telling you either. Does this help?
Yes, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.